So firstly, I'm going to start straight off. No sleep tonight. That's a, from a drumming perspective, that's a great way to enter a record, man.
Yeah, thanks. I think Eric's trying to kill me is what it is. Every record he's trying to make something faster than the last. So it was funny. He sent that demo over to me and said, hey, can you play this fast? And I went, yeah, I could do that. Sure, no problem. And that was actually the, I believe the first one we tracked for the record. When I went into finally record, I was like, let's knock the big one out. And it was a lot of fun. I think eventually once the album's out there and people know the songs, that I can't not imagine opening the set with that song. It's the perfect opener for the crowd. So I better keep in shape.
Yeah. Well, physically, how, like going into the record, how physically, how fit do you, for this record, did you enter the studio?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I try to maintain, you know, you can't work out as hard as you do on the road because you don't get that adrenaline from the show and that. So, you know, we work out before the show and then you have the show. It's a whole different mindset. And, you know, at home you have the distractions of the wife, kid, dogs, home, those things. But I maintained and kept it together. So going into the studio, I was ready and I'm here in my little home studio, well rehearsed to do the song. And it went, you know, relatively smooth for the most part. You know, there's always certain songs that maybe you didn't get the right tones and you have to go back and try to do it again. But we had a blast in the studio, and having Eric produce and engineer again, with, you know, the team that we really got with Doug McKean, who's also engineered the record, and Rickard, his right hand man, you know, all the, and Mike Fasano, my drum tech, all these people. It's a fun experience to make records, the past couple records. It's not the pressure keg that it used to be when you're, okay, we're renting out Capitol Studios and time is money. Let's go. Time is money. Let's go. It was, hey, let's sit back and get what we really want to get. Getting back to your question, I was in great shape and it was fun. It was kind of a weird, you asked that and it's, it was kind of bittersweet. So I had gone for my yearly, dermatology checkup the week before I went into the studio. And they found a little spot and took a little piece of it and said, hey, we're just going to send it through. And before I laid down the first song that morning, I got a call that I had a melanoma, I had cancer. And so recording the record, I kind of had that looming over me that, oh shit, I've got cancer. Luckily we caught it extremely early and I was able to finish the record. They said, hey, you got 30 days, be home in 30 days. We got to take care of this. I said, okay, well, I'm going to finish this record and then I'll be home. So it kind of gave me an extra drive on the record to do something, you know, granted it's rock and I'm playing for the songs, but I really had the momentum to push myself because I had something ahead of me that I had to deal with. And, you know, knock on wood, I'm great now. Everything's fine. We took care of it. And it was just a minor surgery. So people have it much worse out there, but it was scary in the moment for sure.
But well, it's hard enough to go into the studio. That the anxiety of going into the studio with that hanging over your head is pretty intense, man.
It was those first few days. You know, I was emotional. You know, I'm not going to say I didn't, you know, get emotional and cry about it and worry. You know, having to call my wife from 4 hours away and say, "Hey, guess what? I've got cancer and I'm not coming home." She was like, you're not going to come home. And I was like, no, I'm going to knock this out. And even Eric was like, you sure you don't want to do this first? And I said, absolutely not. I need to do this because it's better for this. And again, I turned it into a positive. You know, what are you going to do? It's what with the cards that were dealt to me. And we caught it early. So I knew I was going to be okay. You know, the doctor was very confident that I was going to be okay. You know, a lot of people have had a lot worse. So, I knew that everything was going to be fine, even though I was nervous and scared, as anybody I think would be when you hear the big C word, it scares the shit out of you. So that was kind of my, I got to fight through this mentality for the record.
Well, I'm just thinking that being a drummer, that can't that be really kind of therapeutic as well, that, you know, you get pissed off getting, you know, getting to hear something like that, and you get to hit drums, hit things, you know, all day. You get a lot of aggression out that way. Do you say that it works like that?
100%. You know, I tell everybody my job is to count to four and hit things. It's kind of the truth. I am the most laid back person you'll probably ever meet. And I think a lot of it has to do with hitting those things. You know, at the end of the day, I'm too tired to even care. So. Don't trip.
Back to No Sleep Tonight. It's got that really punk rock edge to it as well. It's a little bit different for you guys, especially the last few records. Where did that come from?
I think it really stems from both Brent and Eric. You know, Eric had a vision, being the producer. He had a vision for this record to be a little bit more punk rock, to be a little bit more raw. Because we're, you know, Attention, even Threat to Survival, the few previous records, were pretty expansive, and they had a lot of soundscapes going on in the songs, and everything was very spread in that way. This one, we wanted to be a very direct album. The vocals are right here, everything is right here, and in your face, because the subject matter is very in your face for this record, because it's commentary on what we've all gone through, because that's what Shinedown does. We write about what we know and what we've lived through, and it's, as we all know, been a couple crappy years for sure, to understate it quite a bit. That's where the vibe of this record, we wanted it to be just that raw, here you go, punk rock vibe. And it still sounds like Shinedown. You're never going to take that away from, you know, Brent's voice is Brent's voice. He sounds like that. And then we have those moments in the ballady songs, like Daylight and stuff like that, where it gets a little more expansive. But overall, we wanted that punk rock vibe and kind of get back to our angst roots, you know?
Yep.
Well, what's your influence on the songs when you're writing the songs and you're recording the songs? I mean, you as a drummer, does it happen that you come up with things as a drummer that takes the song into a different direction or something like that? Does it happen?
It can. It's a song by song basis. Some of them are very, because usually, Eric and Brent and Zach will create the demo, and the demo will just have, you know, finger drums holding a place, a vibe or a thought, just tempo wise. And then I'll get those demos and I'll talk to, especially to Eric, since he's recording and producing, I'll talk to him mostly. Hey, what are you feeling for this? I'm hearing this, these kinds of things. And it'll be one of two things. He'll either go, I really want it pretty close to the demo, but with some cool fills, or he'll be like, I don't know. do something, go play. And some of the songs are that way, and it takes the song to a different place. But other songs, like No Sleep, was very locked into, okay, this is punk rock. We're going to have these fast six-template fill things because they match the guitars. And then we kind of got to the bridge section and changed it up a little bit. And that's where it got, where I came in with my creativity, because I'm not a songwriter. I don't play a melodic instrument or anything like that. Even though I have too many guitars, it's just they're wallpaper at this point, but I still can't play them. my job is to play for the song, and I appreciate that. And that's what I'd like to do. I chose drums because I love them, and drums are a support instrument. We're not the lead. I never wanted to be the lead singer. I never wanted to be the lead guitarist. I like to be the drummer. That's who I am. So, it's very much song by song by song, how that's coming together. And it's pretty organic for the most part.
When's the last time you were afraid? I haven't been afraid a day in my life.
The dead don't die, the heart still beats. Head held high, a heart beats streets. Life's killed me 100,000 times. You can try, but the dead don't die. Knock me down, 6 feet deep. One more round, no reprieve. Life's killed me 100,000 times. You can try, but the dead don't die. In the mirror, no reflection. Another day, just another resurrection. Where's the glory? Just another story. I won't be the ending that was written for me. And I'm never running, so try it again. Starting me over right where I began.
It's pretty boring, isn't it? This existence. Might as well not take fear off the table.
The dead don't die, the heart still beats. Head held high, I haunt these streets. Lies kill me 100,000 times. You can try, but the dead don't die. Knock me down, 6 feet deep. One more round, no reprieve. Lies kill me 100,000 times. You can try, but the dead don't die.
I think everyone's a little scared of what's next. Live or die. Live or die.
Eric's been producing the last couple of records with you guys. How is it for you, you know, working with your rhythm brother, you know, because you guys are locked in, you know, basically 365 days a year. How is it when you get in the production, you know, in the studio environment, how important is it to, and how understanding are you guys together in regards to locking in and creating new music?
You know what? It's pretty cool. To be honest, we have a very loving relationship anyway. And when Eric came into this band during the Sound of Madness period, we met him as a producer. He had a studio in Charleston. We were writing some demo stuff at that studio and kind of writing with him. And then when it came time to try to find a new bass player, he was kind of the one at the front of our list, and he actually turned us down initially. He was like, I don't think I want to do that. I want to stay home and be a producer. And we wrung his arm and finally got him in the band. And thank God we did, because he's become such an integral part of who we are. When it comes to the studio, he's able to take off I'm a band member, your bass player, and put on the producer cap, because that's what he's done before. I think this record almost killed him. He stressed about it quite a bit, and there was a lot of pressure on him because not only were we in the middle of the pandemic, he had just bought a new home, closed down his studio that we did Attention at, built a new studio on his new property, and we had to kind of rush through building it because we couldn't go anywhere else to record, because the initial idea was, okay, we'll go rent a studio in Nashville or something to record the record. Well, you can't, COVID. So he built his studio and recorded right there. So he was under tremendous amounts of pressure because here he is in a new environment, making sure it sounds good, making sure everything's great. And I think he did a wonderful job. If you'd asked him, he'd say he hates it because he's too inside the box. And he's a perfectionist. But when it came to recording drums, he and I, we have a great relationship, and I can read his brain and he can read mine. He knows when I'm not feeling something and then, okay, let's take a break. Or he knows when he can tell me, go in there, do something. I can go in there and go, I know exactly what you want, and play it for him and get what he needs. And it's a fun environment. Having him, my drum tech, Mike Fasano, who's teched every record with me since Sound of Madness. We have a great working relationship, and he's one of those funny guys that just has the one-liners at the perfect time when everybody's pissed off or something's going on. He can say something just stupid and everybody laughs and breaks the tension. He's that guy. And so is Doug McKean, who has also been working with us in Sound of Madness as our main engineer. They both have a connection, so that releases that pressure valve sometimes when it's needed.
Cool.
I get long-winded.
I read somewhere that when it comes to your drumming, that two guys that you were really into when you started out were Tommy Lee and the late great Neil Peart from Rush. I mean, I'm not a musician, but those drummers are quite different, are they?
They're completely polar opposite, and I am a fan of them. But I'm wondering where you got that from, because they're not on my top 10. Neither of them.
Oh, I think it was actually, it's an interview in Drum Magazine.
That is media misinformation.
Oh, there we go.
Actually, I have nothing but respect for both of them, especially, well, both of them equally. They both do, as you said, completely different things. Tommy Lee was the consummate 80s showman, look at me kind of thing, which fit great for Motley Crue. And Neil Peart was, you know, he was the scholar. He was the student. He was doing things that nobody even thought of on drums. And I'm a huge Rush fan. I enjoy Rush, but those weren't the guys that really got me early on in drumming. It was Nika McBrain. It was The Police, James Brown's drummers, Phil Collins, Metallica. Those were more my formative bands. And then I later fell into Motley Crue and fell into Rush a little bit later. I heard Tom Sawyer and stuff, and I have an older brother who introduced me to a lot of music early on. He's a radio guy, and he's always been a big music fan. So we thought we'd be the next Van Halen. He plays guitar. That obviously didn't happen. But yeah, it's funny. I wonder where they got that from. I never would have said that. But I'll take it. I have nothing but respect for Tommy Lee and Neil Peart, and God rest his soul. You know, gone too soon, but yeah, it's funny.
But you mentioned Police are such a funny band. I find Police a funny band. It's they're relatively easy songs, you think, but they go about it very much the difficult way.
Yeah, I beg anybody to play those songs like Stuart Copeland plays them. Nobody plays like him. And that's what's cool about, I mean, not only that, to sing those beautiful melodies and play bass at the same time, which is two different rhythms, blows my mind. And then Andy Summers is a very underrated guitar player. You know, the textures he put out there, very much like The Edge from U2, just is what that music is. So the Police, not that they're underrated, they are a huge band, but I think the musicianship of each individual is underrated. Maybe not Stuart Copeland, because in the drum community, he's one of the big ones. But Andy Summers for sure.
Right out of the gate, they punch me in the face. They drag me all
Well, you mentioned Metallica, and a guy like, I don't think any drummer has gotten as much shit through the years as Lars Ulrich. And I mean, what's your take on Lars Ulrich as a drummer?
You know what? He changed the drum community. As a drummer, I think he's had his good days and his bad days, because we did open for them once at a festival over in Europe. And I was lucky enough to be able to be side stage and watch it. And I think he was having an off night. It was very hard to watch. And I've heard that about him. But then sometimes you see him and it's an amazing performance. And I think he's kind of done the ebb and flow. And he also doesn't take any shit from anybody. You know, he's Lars. It's his band and he's going to tell you that. And I think because he has that bravado attitude, sometimes people read him wrong, maybe. But if you truly listen to Metallica, especially some of the earlier stuff, but even through the Black Album and on, he's a pretty cool and different thrash drummer. He puts his crashes in weird places that aren't typical of where a drummer would put them. He's kind of playing to the guitars, because honestly, I think Hetfield is the rhythm of that band. His right hand is the rhythm of that band, and everybody's following Hetfield. And that's cool. And that's what makes Metallica cool. And that's what makes Lars cool. I mean, you can bag on the guy and maybe he's not as technical as so-and-so from somewhere. Who cares? He's Metallica and is what makes that band sound like Metallica. You know, I'm not the most technical drummer and people bag on me. I don't care. I'm the drummer for Shinedown and I play the songs for Shinedown the way I want to play them and the way I hear them.
Suicide, suicide, 1, 2, 3. Maybe these drugs are addicted to me. Can you hear me in there? Is there anyone there? Keep your dyslexia next to your imaginary friends. They all talk shit about the shape I'm in. Yeah, they really don't care. They're breathing rapid air. So pack your bags and leave a note. And thank the ones that kept you afloat. Company. Oh, 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 oh. And go on and be your dysfunctional self. Life's too short to play someone else. 'Cause being normal is just a trap. But you're never so gone that you can't turn back. So go on and be unpredictable. Shatter the glass when it's half full. The audience has waited all this time. You're well rehearsed and you know your lines. So introduce them to the wonderful dysfunctional you. Terrified, look alive, maybe they're right. I'm a little too dim when the moment gets bright. I'm a total eclipse. Can you read my lips? They say, come on. Crazy feels good and the water's just fine. So I take a deep breath. They ain't seen nothing yet. So go on and be your dysfunctional self. Life's too short to play someone else. 'Cause being normal is just a trap. But you're never so gone that you can't turn back. So go on and be unpredictable. Shatter the glass when it's half full.
Let's pick apart a couple of other songs here. Army of the Unappreciated. That's another very high octane, very ballsy, punky kind of tune. Where did that was that towards the end of the recording or was it towards the front?
I'm trying to remember, honestly. I think that was right in the middle of the recording when we did that, because obviously the songs were recorded in a much different order than where they ended up on the record. But I think that was towards the middle of recording when we were finally getting some good drum tones. We kind of knew where the drum tones were going to land in the record, and we had our favorite snares and our favorite toms and bass drums. And, you know, I have my whole collection at Eric's house, and we're having a blast finding those. And that one, that's just one of those songs. It's straight ahead. That's fun to play. You know, it's got the punk rock thing. It's kind of got the Rage Against the Machine unabashed kind of playing to it. Those are the fun songs to play because I probably played it twice, maybe three times, and we got what we needed and moved on. Because it's in the wheelhouse of what a drummer would do. You know, there was no overthinking anything with that song. And I like those. You know, that's one of the songs where you can get some aggression out and just go in there and be a punk rock drummer. Go in there and channel your inner whoever and let it go.
How hard was it to find your settings in the studio? Because obviously it's the first time you've played in that studio and it's a brand new studio. Was it hard for you guys? Because every room sounds different.
Yeah, no. Here's the thing. Eric is, and he would hate if I said this, but he truly is a genius. And he studies and he thinks, and he's been thinking about this studio for years. About, hey, when I move my studio and I finally close down this place, what do I want? Like when we record at East West Studios or Capitol Studios or all these famous studios for other records, he'd be walking around the room looking at the treatments and asking questions about where the reverb chamber was. And you know, his mind was already thinking, how can I make my room have a piece of this? And so he really designed a beautiful place with some friends of his and went through the meticulous mathematical equations to make sure all the baffling is in the right spot and everything's gonna be. So when we finally got in there, long story short, we kind of got in the room, we set up a kick drum, snare drum, hi-hat in a few different places, and we play, and he'd just listen to the room and the engineer would listen to the room, and we found this one sweet spot for most of it that was kind of a weird spot because it backed me up to a wall behind me, and on the other side of that wall was the control room, so I couldn't really see anybody, I could only hear. But there was this low end that came out of the kit and the cymbals kind of became less aggressive. And it was like, this is the spot. And that's where we kind of started at. And then it came into which drums are going to be the ones that we're going to use for this record. And we lucked into quite a few pretty quickly. Snare drums are always a song by song thing. When you're recording drums, snare drums kind of a signature to a song, you know, they have a character. And then we had fun, you know, a couple of the tracks, I'm not going to give away which tracks, I want people to listen to it, but you'll hear crickets on one track. Those crickets were because those drums were recorded outside of his studio in the outdoors. And there was a microphone placed way away to kind of get some ambience. And when we listened back, we heard the crickets at the end of it. And so we kept them and they're on the record. So listen for the crickets. That drum track was played outside.
Dude, That's really cool. I'm just thinking, like, drum heads. Do you change drum heads every day when you come into the studio? How does that work? I'm not a musician, so I have no fucking clue.
No, you don't. So typically in a studio situation, when you get your toms sounding good, your bass drum sounding good, those for a record session, they're not going to get changed.
Right.
Unless they start to sound dead, and you'll hear that in the microphone. The engineer will be like, hey, man. Now, snare drums, on the other hand, you're probably going to change them depending on, like, for the heavy songs, they're getting beat the hell out of, right? So those heads aren't going to last as long, so you'll probably change them song to song. For the more the ballady stuff, if you have a specialty tone on that snare, that, you know, there was a couple toms we used on a song that are part of my collection. They're 1960s, 70s Gresh toms with the original heads on. But they sound cool. Why would I change the heads? They sound cool the way they are. The heads are original, and they sound great under a microphone. They're going to stay on there. There's no need. You know, I think Charlie Watts, rest his soul as well, he had his snare drum, they never changed the head on that thing. It just had a sound, you know?
long did it take for you to put down your drum parts on this album?
I think about 2.5-3 weeks, okay, on and off.
Yeah,
that's about 2.5. We do a song a day, maybe song and a half. We weren't trying to push ourselves. You know, obviously I had the deadline to get home for my health, but we had plenty of time. There were some other songs that we tracked that didn't make the record that we may or may not use in the future. But, you know, it was we weren't trying to kill ourselves because we didn't have to pay for the time in the studio. So why not enjoy yourself and really focus on the song as it's coming to you? The only one that kind of gave us a little bit of trouble drum wise was Planet Zero, because that was also one of the early ones that we retracted. And then once we got through the session and listened back, we went, those drums don't sound as good as the rest. So we had to go back and retrack it, which was actually a great thing, because I think I got a better performance the second time I played it.
Did you just retrack it, or did you put different gear? Did you use different drums or anything?
A different snare drum, and I believe it was a different set of toms. I'm not 100%. I took notes on every song of what I used on each song drum wise, because you forget after a while. Drums, yep, and cymbals. I think we definitely used different cymbals too. The first one I had a little bit more aggressive, larger cymbals, and they really took over the mix and became annoying. I hate crash cymbals, to be honest. As a drummer, I hate them. They're annoying. They take over the mix, they take over the room. I hate cymbals. So I went to smaller, a little bit more reserved sounding cymbals, and it really allowed the drums and the performance to speak more.
Very cool.
How do you feel about the album format? I mean, you've recorded this, you present it in a certain way with the order of the songs, and you have these instrumental kind of tracks in between songs. And then once it's out there, people are going to make up their own Shine Down playlists. You know, they're going to pick a song here, a song there, and all that. How do you look at the album format today when you have services and stuff like that?
It's a double-edged sword. I'm glad people are listening to it, but I hate the playlist listening idea. Yeah. I'm just going to pick my favorite song bands, and you never really learn much about the band anymore unless you listen to their record. And especially we go in and we make a record that we want you to listen to front to back, especially this one and the previous one, Attention. Attention was the concept. It was made to listen to that way. And I think a lot of people, the younger generation, not to age myself, but, you know, they don't know any different. They don't know any different. It's make a playlist or put on a Spotify and see what spins. So they don't know any different. They've never probably even sat down and listened to a CD or a vinyl or a cassette. So they don't know. So I can't be mad about it, but I wish they would try, you know. But I think there's hope. My niece, who is 19 now, is a big music fan, and she'd rather sit down and listen to a vinyl record than make a playlist. So somewhere out there, there's hope, but I think the masses are just gonna make a playlist. And, you know, and there's other things too. You know, we have, you know, Apple has their Atmos thing. They want to, you know, showcase that, and that's great. You know, great technology. I think movies sound great with it. This record wasn't made for that, because it's not supposed to be spatial. It's supposed to be here. But when you download it, if you have that turned on your phone, you're going to hear it in Atmos, which is a cool mix. And we had somebody mix it in the Atmos, but it's not the intended way for this record to be heard. It's with that off. It's a stereo record. So there's always those things. Technology kind of defeats the artistry sometimes. Hopefully people are paying attention and do it the way, you know, again, in the end, it's just music. It's just to make you feel it. It's to make you feel something. You either attach to it or you don't. You're a Shinedown fan or you're not, who cares? If you're a Shinedown fan, thank you. If you're not and you're into something else, that's cool too. Does it make you feel good? Awesome.
Better pray for the soul of the citizen. Better pray that you're not erased.
going out on the road, what songs are you looking forward to playing? Because it's pretty diverse, even the drumming alone, like the drumming from No Sleep to Sure Is Fun. You know, there's a pretty big, wide fucking variety there. What are you looking forward to?
There is. No Sleep, I definitely look forward to playing because I want to melt some people's faces. Planet Zero has been great. The reaction was great right out of the gates. That's a fun one to play. That's a tough one to play because it's at a weird tempo where all three of us, being guitars, bass, drums, try to rush it a little bit. That song you really got to lay back on to make it feel good. Same thing with Devil from the last record. Devil's the same way. If you don't lay back on that song, it loses its groove. I'd love to play, you know, all the up tempo songs, Saints and things like that. But, you know, Daylight, I think, such a beautiful song, and I don't have a integral role in that because it's very percussive. But
Is that a tambourine you're playing in there?
Yeah, tambourine. I did some bass drum overdub stuff, and there's some other little percussion things in there. I think a snare build up, but it was a marching snare that I have, like an old marching snare with calf heads. So I think to myself, how am I going to pull that off live? Those are the challenges I like, because I'm going to have to maybe set up a percussion kit, or am I going to do it on electronics to be able to get those tones? I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet. So I enjoy those things as an experiment, because I know that song's probably going to be a fan favorite, if not a single. So I better figure it out. And then you mentioned, what was it that you mentioned? You mentioned,
Sure Is Fun.
Sure Is Fun. Yeah. That song is fun. I love that song. That's probably one of my hidden favorites on the record. I don't know if it'll be a single. I'd like it to be. And going back to my niece, when I played the record for her and she listened through it, that's the one that spoke to her. She's like, that speaks to my generation. And probably because a lot of the drums are programmed.
Right.
How am I going to pull that off? You've got these programmed loops and it goes from an electronic kit to a real kit, back to an electronic kit. I'm only one drummer, so I got to figure it out and still make it cool live. So those challenges I really enjoy. But when it comes to the record, if I could play all the songs, I would, and I'd love to, because they're new and they're fresh. We've got a lot of songs to cover in a set, you know, after 20 years and a lot of singles that were successful. Now it's gotten to the point, I guess it's a blessing in disguise. It's also a kind of a curse. What do you play? You can only sing so many songs in a night, and you know, curfews are real, and if you go over the curfew, you end up paying. So I don't know.
Another day in outer space, do you feel out of place? Well, that's good, yeah, you should. But anyway, things have changed, and it's clear to see you're up to no good. But honestly, the gravity is killing me, and integrity is being overlooked. I'm in a bind. Realities are unraveling, and yes, this is happening. So wait one minute, can't say I didn't try. Been knock, knock, knocking on the door outside. Tell me what I gotta do. We've had enough of all these pointless points of view. But check it out, the word of mouth is the joke's on you. So wait one minute, can't say I didn't try. Been knock, knock, knocking on the door outside. Tell me what you've got to lose. We've had enough of all these pointless points of view. Just catch the checks, you'll never have.
playing Simple Man by Lynyrd Skynyrd in those as well. I mean, how do you go about picking a cover song to play?
That one was organic, and I'll make what is a long story as short as possible. When this band formed, we really never played covers as a band. We'd all played in different bands and done our thing. This band is not a cover band. I know when Smith and Myers goes out, they do a lot of covers and stuff, but that's their thing. I could care less. So Simple Man happened very organically because our original guitar player, Jason Todd, was married to Ronnie Van Zant's daughter. And his wife or ex, you know, widow, they owned a club here in Jacksonville, Florida called Freebird at the time. And that's where we first started playing. And as a thank you to Judy, who's Ronnie's widow, we played Simple Man one night, or Jason and Brent did, because it's an acoustic thing. And it was great. And we never thought about it again. So we ended up getting out on tour early in the Lee Whisper days. I think even before the record had been out, but before Simple Man was on the record, because it ended up getting put on and restriped on there later. We're playing and we end up in Boston, and there's a DJ up there, Mistress Carrie, who was very famous in the Boston area, very popular. She was having bands come in and play covers acoustically for one of their radio promotions. That's the only one we knew. So we played it, or they played it, and she put it on the air, and it took off. It took off. And so the label came back to us, and we were still struggling with, you know, Fly From The Inside was out and wasn't doing as good as we wanted it to do. 45 was going to come out. There's a lot of controversy because it said staring down the barrel of a 45. So at the time MTV wouldn't touch it. And, you know, it was all these controversies, and the label went, "You've got Simple Man. Let's put that on the record. Let's go." And so it's been part of us ever since. And we can't, as much as I'd love to take it out of the set, cause I'm tired of hearing it.
Love it. All hey right. Man, thank you for your time, man. It's always anytime. It's really good.
Great
to see you, man.
You really good to see you. Everybody's happy and healthy. That makes me happy. And if I don't see you in June, I better see both of you in the fall.
Absolutely, cool. Mate. And congratulations. Kill it. Fucking great record, man.
Yeah.
Thank you. Awesome. I mean, it's a lot. Yeah. I appreciate it. Thank you. Cool. You guys have a wonderful rest of your evening, and we'll talk to you later.
Talk soon.
You
mate.
Too.
Thank you.
Cool.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, Mama told me when I was young, said, sit beside me, my only son, and listen closely to what I say, and if you do this, it'll help you some sunny day. It will. Oh, take your time, don't live too fast. Troubles will come and they will pass. You'll find a warm arm and you'll find love. And don't forget that there is a someone up above. And be a simple man. Oh, won't you do this for me?
It's the